Romans, the 13th chapter, it says, "Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no other authority except from God. Those which exist are established by God. Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil behavior. Do you not want to fear, or do you want no fear of authority like anarchy? Do what is good, and you will have praise for the same. For governments are a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword, the law of capital punishment, for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger, who brings wrath upon one who opposes and practices evil." Every message that I bring on the presidents of the United States require from 6 to 8 to 10 hours of work and study to do this. Now, I have little lapses in my, when I'm speaking here, because I'm looking at my notes, which are many. I print out a lot of notes, and I quote from books, and that quote from writers, and quote from history. Now, the president we're going to study right now is Millard Fillmore. He was Zachary Taylor's vice president. Now, there are many histories written about men. In the other room here, I have a political science and history library, just history of America, mainly. And in that library are pros and cons, people that did not like the man they're writing about, and people that praised the presidents or whoever in history. Millard Fillmore was looked upon as a dunce, as a know-nothing president. He had insight that many people don't even understand or hear about. I could do a message on Millard Fillmore for 2.5 hours at least. The things that he faced in America, in history, were monumental. And how he tried to get America through without a civil war was a miracle in itself. He lived from January the 7th, 1800 to March the 8th, 1874. I have a lot of things to tell you about this man. He was the 13th president of the United States. He was in office after Zachary Taylor died from July the 9th, 1850 to March the 4th, 1853. Now let me say this about Zachary Taylor. Zachary Taylor was a slave owner. But Zachary Taylor did not want to bring slavery into any new acquisitions. Basically, he won the Mexican-American War, Zachary Taylor did. He was a great president. He was old, rough and ready. Any time that he was needed as a military leader, he was there. And he gave his best. He knew every man in his army, and they knew him, and they fought. And they won for you what you have today, good, bad, or indifferent. I was listening to a set of series on all the presidents of the United States by the History Channel. And when it came to Zachary Taylor, they very much misrepresented Zachary Taylor completely. He was for the Compromise of 1850. He wanted to preserve the Union. He did not want slavery going into any new states at all. One of the reasons why he didn't want Cuba as an acquisition, because he believed that slavery was there, because Cuba was basically a Spanish slave colony. And he didn't want any more slave states. He didn't want California, Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, or any of those places to be slave states. He gave in to Texas because it was a state or a nation within a nation. So he gave in to Texas as a slave state. He was vice president of the United States, Millard Fillmore was. He was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee in office between March the 4th, 1841 and March the 3rd, 1843. He was a member of the United States House of Representatives from New York's 32nd Division and District, March the 4th, 1837 to March the 3rd, 1843. He was the 14th controller of New York from 1848 to 1849. His political parties was the Anti-Masonic Lodge and the Anti-Masonic Party. Now, you go back into American history, and American history is an extension of church history, as we see up here on the chart behind me. American history is an extension of church history, because America was one of the first nations in the world that was not a state church. In other words, one church didn't rule the whole nation. You had to go to that church, you had to pay tithes to that church or else. Baptists fought very few wars. But they fought in the American Revolution so they could have freedom of religion here. The first colony in America that had freedom of religion was Rhode Island. Dr. John Clark fought very hard. Providence, Rhode Island, Newport, Rhode Island. Roger Williams and Dr. John Clark are the founders of the first colony in America that had freedom of religion in it. Millard Fillmore was a anti-Masonic party from 1828 to 1832. He was a Whig between 1832 and 1855. He was part of the Know-Nothings from 1855 to 1856. And he was a Democrat from 1857 to 1874. He had two wives. His first wife was Abigail Powers. They were married in 1826 and she died in 1853. And he married Carolyn McIntosh in 1858 until his death. His children were Mary Millard. His parents were Nathaniel Fillmore and Phoebe Millard. He was in the military service in the New York Militia and the New York Guard, and his years of service were 1820 to 1830s, and then also 1860s to 1870s. And basically the New York National Guard. He was a major in rank. He had many political battles. He, what we might call, commandeered or refereed between many fights in the Senate and the House of Representatives, and even in the nation. He went along with Zachary Taylor's compromise of 1850. Even though Millard Fillmore never believed in slavery at all, ever, But his ideas of slavery, and that slavery was dividing this nation. The North was just trying to commandeer over the South and tell them what they could do with their slaves, etc. They were infringing upon states' rights. Millard Fillmore, even though he did not believe in slavery, compromised to preserve the Union. Now a little bit about his life, his early life. In January 17, 1800, he was born in a log cabin on a farm that is now near Moravia, Cayuga County in the Franklin Lakes region of New York. Like I said before, his parents were Phoebe Millard and Nathaniel Fillmore. And he was number two of eight children. Nathaniel Fillmore was the son of Nathaniel Fillmore Sr. and lived between 1739 to 1814, a native of Franklin, Connecticut. And he became one of the earliest settlers in Bennington, Vermont. In 1799, Nathaniel and Phoebe moved from Vermont and sought better opportunities and became tenant farmers when they couldn't get title to their land there where they had lived. They moved to an area called Sempronius, where they leased land as tenant farmers or sharecroppers, what you might say. And the father, Nathaniel, also occasionally taught school. So he had an education. Millard's early life was one of hard work, frequent near starvation, and virtually no formal schooling, even though his father was a teacher. Millard Fillmore was a scholar. I will say this. What is a scholar?
A scholar.
Well,
a scholar.
What is a scholar?
Somebody that studies and learns.
Someone that studies and learns. I am a scholar, and I am a student. And I have studied all of my life. I spend probably at least 40 hours a week still studying in this time in my life. Mm-hmm. And writing and teaching. Millard Fillmore was a student, and he loved to learn. By the way, he founded one of the first presidential libraries. He helped found colleges. Now, Nathaniel was chosen to serve in many local offices in his area. And then we have the War of 1812. Millard was too young to go to war because he was only 12 years old in 1812. His father tried to get him to be an apprentice of some sort, and he went from one thing to the other as apprentice. He finally decided to become a lawyer. And he went in different law offices and studied in the offices and finally passed his bar. He fell in love with a young lady. And had two children by her. Millard taught school in East Aurora and accepted a few cases of law. He was a little reluctant and not quite sure of himself as a lawyer. Fillmore enjoyed his independence in his East Aurora practice of law. He was offered more advanced and larger cities, but he was happy where he was. He and Abigail wed on February 4th, 1826. And they had two children, Millard Powers Fillmore, that lived between 1828 and 1889, and Mary Abigail Fillmore from 1832 to 1854. He became a Buffalo, New York politician and was an anti-Masonic leader. And he was opposed to the presidency of General Jackson because General Jackson was a Mason. You have to realize that almost all of the first presidents of the United States and most of the presidents of the United States have been Masons. The Masonic Lodge is kind of like a religious organization. I won't go into that thoroughly in any way. But I was told when I was young, and I was a pipe fitter, that I'd never amount to anything unless I joined the Masonic Lodge. I would be a worker. But if I wanted to be a leader, then I needed to be in the Masonic Lodge. You could be work in the oil fields, you could do anything else, but if you wanted to become somebody in those organizations, you cannot become somebody unless you were a Mason. That's a fact. I was told when I surrendered to preach that if I wanted to ever be anybody in the ministry, that I needed to join the lodge. Now, I have pastored church and been members of church where there were many Masons in the church. And I have nothing to say bad about the Masons that I worked with and served the Lord with at all. But there is a lot of power in the Masonic Lodge. And I know of one pastor that went in the church where there was about 150 Masons in the church. And he fought the Masonic Lodge right and left and right and left. Finally, he ran everybody off that was a Mason in that church. And they went and joined other churches, and they went and served the Lord in other churches. Many of the deacons that I served with in churches were Masons. Except for the time that you have to take out in the Masonic Lodge and learning all the different things and all the different degrees up to the 33rd degree, and you can't get the 33rd degree unless you go to Europe to get to pass that degree. I've never met a Mason that was a detriment to the Lord's work, only in that they spent a lot of time in the Masonic Lodge. Maybe they could have done a little better just working in churches. Which they did. Now, one thing that Millard Fillmore did, he did away with debtor's prison. Debtor's prison. You know, debtor's prison is was a terrible thing. He abolished imprisonment for debt in 1830. He was believed in the expansion of the infrastructure of the American government. Many of the Republicans at the time, well, the Republican Party wasn't even going, but the Democrats were Republicans, if you go back far enough. What the Republicans believe today, the very Democrats believed 100 years ago. Fillmore believed that the American government ought to, as a nation, fund the infrastructure of the nation. He believed in expanding it. The Whig Party was something like the Whig Party. It took its name after the Whig Party in the United Kingdom. Fillmore helped draft city governments and their constitutions. He attended the Unitarian Church and became one of the leading citizens of Buffalo, New York. He was active in the New York militia and basically kept the rank of major of the 47th Brigade. In 1832, Fillmore ran for the U.S. House of Representatives on the anti-Masonic presidential candidate William Wirt. President Jackson easily won his re-election at the time. Fillmore, when he won the elective seat of the House of Representatives, had to wait for more than a year or two to go in and actually go to work. One of Fillmore's real opponents in political life was a man by the name of Weed. Everything that Fillmore believed, Weed believed different. Finally, Fillmore left the anti-Masonic lodge because he thought that the foundation of it was too narrow. And he joined the Whig Party from the National Republicans. There were a lot of dissatisfied Democrats also that were going into the Whig Party. What really organized them was the opposition to Jackson, Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson was an anti-infrastructure. He believed that every state ought to pay for its own infrastructure, if at all. Now, to build a nation, we know one thing. You got to have roads so you can travel and communicate. You've got to have canals for irrigation. You've got to have dams. You've got to have libraries. You got to have schools, and you got to have post offices, don't you? These are very important infrastructure in a nation. And a nation is judged by its infrastructure. He believed in economic growth through a rechartering the Second Bank of the United States. He believed in federally funded internal improvements, roads, bridges, and canals, libraries, and schools. And even though Weed was an anti-slavery, as Millard Fillmore was, Millard Fillmore was quiet about it because he believed that individual states had the right to make up their own minds. Fillmore encouraged the expansion of the Great Lakes and canals between the Great Lakes and the Erie Canal, etc. He was very influential with Senator Daniel Webster. He believed he was one of the greatest men in American history. He had a close relationship with him until Webster's death. He believed in building up harbors for navigation for the Navy of the United States. He believed in building up the Navy and also harbors to house the navies. His improvements on the Hudson Bay River, construction of a bridge across the Potomac River also. There was a panic of 1837, which Millard Fillmore lived through, and he was learning from this, sitting back quietly studying economics and politics. The man was a student, a scholar. People don't give him credit for that at all. Now, also during his time as a politician in America, he stood against having Cuba as a state of the United States. Cuba, and remember now, he's anti-slavery, but he's quiet anti-slavery because he wants to preserve the Union. In the Compromise of 1850, one of the things which you never hear anywhere about this, in the Compromise of 1850, there were five different bills. It was broken up into five different bills. Zachary Taylor wanted to push through the Compromise of 1850 to preserve the Union. The History Channel says that Zachary Taylor was against the Compromise 1850. That is not true. He didn't get to sign it, but Millard Fillmore did. And they rejected it and rejected it and rejected it, and finally they broke it up into five different separate bills. One of the things in those bills was that they were going to kill and bring to extinction the American buffalo so that they could subdue the what we call the Plains Indians, which I'm part of, actually. I'm part of the civilized and what they might call the uncivilized Indians. Both I'm from several different tribes, even though I'm almost all Indian. They gave free ammunition and bullets to anyone that would kill buffalo. Now, pay attention. Nothing in history is new. There's nothing new under the sun, as Solomon said. President Millard Fillmore, there was a great amount of immigration into the United States. And he believed that anybody immigrating into the United States ought to learn the tongue of the people. And they ought to not be promoting their nation where they came from, but promoting America. And he believed that immigrants could absolutely, in a detrimental way, influence elections in America. Does that sound familiar? There's nothing new under the sun. Fillmore warned into the acquisition of Cuba, which was a Spanish colony. Now, he could have gone to war with Spain and got Cuba, like we got California, New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, etc. But he chose not to do it. He worked it out. He said, there's a real problem with Cuba. The people in Cuba will not assimilate as American citizens. They'll never want to speak our language. They'll never want to do things as we do as a nation. They will want to be known as Cubans, not Americans. Does that sound familiar? I don't think that we ought to be flying any other nation's flags in our homes, where we came from. We ought to be flying American flags. And we ought to respect that flag. And if you want to live in America, you ought to be an American. And that's what Millard Fillmore believed. These are Millard Fillmore's words. He said it would be unwise to bring Cuba into the United States because its population was linguistically and culturally different from Americans. It was entirely uncontroversial in 1852 that these people would not assimilate. they would not assimilate. And so if they won't assimilate, if we can't assimilate them into American culture, then why would we want to acquire Cuba? Now we know because it's real close to our continent, you know. Now it's communist. We got a problem. He said, while immigrants to the United States were welcome, they were expected to assimilate and adopt American values. Cuba, as a southern state, would all at once add a large, unassimilated, culturally distinctly different population to the United States and would cause potential strife for all kinds of problems in the future. As a slave state, it would be taken in as a slave state. His reservations at that time were completely reasonable and logical, weren't they? Even though Fillmore was not a slaver, he did not believe in slavery, his one important contribution for his whole political career is that he tried to preserve the Union. Seward did not want to do that. They tried to fan the growing anti-slavery movement in America. Fillmore disliked slavery intensely, but he saw no reason for it to be a political issue. The North was basically alienating the South from the Union. Clay and Tyler and Harrison, these were all leading men at this period of time. Harrison died on April 4th, 1881, as you know, and Tyler was elevated to the presidency. John Tyler took over tremendously. Fillmore and Tyler worked together, but they worked against each other in many ways. Weed was one of his enemies also, but Weed said this about Fillmore. He was able in debate. He was wise and counsel and inflexible in his political sentiments. Fillmore ran many bills through Congress and the Senate that have affected this country to this day. Even when he was out of office, he continued to be politically active, and he even ran for president, or wanted to run for president, and he did run for president after he was out of the presidency. He did not want to run the second time, but he saw America needed a strong leader that could compromise with opposing parties for the benefit and the furtherance of the Union. He worked together many times with other people that were his opponents, yet he could compromise and work with them. In 1846, Millard Fillmore was involved in the founding of what now is known as University of Buffalo in New York, and became its first chancellor and served as a chancellor of the Buffalo, New York University until his death in 1874. By the way, Millard Fillmore maintained good health from 1800 to 1874. He was very conscientious of his health. After he left the presidency, he went over into Europe, and he visited the Queen Victoria. And Queen Victoria said that he was the most handsome man that she'd ever met. He was very careful how he admitted Texas into the Union. Under his presidency, he tried to limit Texas' powers. Under his presidency, they settled the borders between Texas and New Mexico, which almost caused a war with Texas. Texas have always been a proud state. And they sent a letter to Congress saying it to Congress, if you tread on Texas ground, we will consider it an act of war. And we will send our militia. And Millard Fillmore calmed that situation down. He's tried to stop, by all means, slavery into any of the new states that were admitted into the Union or even colonies. Fillmore, when he was the head of the Ways and Means Chairman or Committee, made him a candidate for the controller, and he was successful in getting Whig nomination for the 1847 election. He tried to unite his party. The man wanted to unite people. We now have someone in the White House that is one of the greatest men of division in this country that I've ever seen. His absolute counterpoint would be Millard Fillmore. Millard Fillmore tried to bring peace to the Union. Peace to the Union. He tried to settle the race problem and the slavery problem and leave it to the states and let it peter out over time without causing a civil war and the destruction of half of the United States of America. Zachary Taylor ran for president, and the most least offensive of all of the other politicians to put in the second place would be Millard Fillmore. Everybody else's, all the other men were hotheads, one way or the other. Hotheads for slavery or hotheads against slavery. Zachary Taylor, even though he was a very large slave owner, did not want slavery advanced anywhere more in the United States of America. And he wanted his slaves freed on his death. That was in his will. Henry Clay wanted to be president. Daniel Webster wanted to be president. Seward wanted to be president. All these men wanted to be the top men, but every one of them were radicals. They were radicals, which would immediately have destroyed the Union. And it did when they elected Abraham Lincoln. When Abraham Lincoln was elected president of the United States were no longer united the very day of his election. They wanted Millard Fillmore to run with Zachary Taylor because he was a proven vote-getter. People liked him. People from both sides liked him. The South kind of trusted him because they knew that he wasn't going to do anything to invade on their state's rights. The North liked him because he was not a slaver and that he also believed in the infrastructure of America. Now, by the way, during this period of time right here, to run a campaign for president or office was considered kind of arrogant. Kind of arrogant. And so he didn't have a campaign. He just stood on his reputation. Millard Fillmore and Zachary Taylor won the presidency of the United States. The Whig ticket won the popular vote by 101,361,393, 47.3% of the vote. And they triumphed with 163 over 127 in the Electoral College. The minor candidates took no electoral votes at all. The anti-slavery movement voted for Martin Van Buren, who won no states at all. Again, Millard Fillmore was taking the safe middle ground to preserve the Union. He was sworn in as Vice President March 5, 1849 in the Senate chamber, which was then Inauguration Day. Fillmore spent 4 months between the election and swearing in being feted by New York Whigs. And winding up affairs in his controller's office, Taylor had written to him and promised influence in the new administration. But Seward and Whig had met and come to a general agreement on how to divide federal jobs in New York. Once finally that Fillmore came to Washington, Seward made a friendly contact with Taylor's cabinet nominees and advisors and general and the general's brother, an alliance between the incoming administration and the Weed Machine. The Weed Machine was soon underway behind Fillmore's back. In exchange for support, Seward and Weed were allowed to designate who was to fill federal jobs in New York. And Fillmore was given far less influence than had been agreed upon. When Fillmore found out about it, he went to Taylor, which only made the warfare against Fillmore's influence more open. There was problems. One thing that he enjoyed about his office of vice president is he had a lifelong love of learning, and he had plenty of time to study. He became deeply involved with the Smithsonian Institute as a member of ex officio of its Board of Regents. Taylor greatly advocated the admission of California and New Mexico with slavery outlawed in those states. Southerners were opposed to it. The Southerners wanted to even annex Cuba, as we talked about earlier. Fillmore believed that slavery would never flourish in California or New Mexico because of the climates. We're not as friendly as those in the South to agriculture. Fillmore debated Weed on many, many occasions. Finally, they lost all pretense of friendship in November 1849 when they met. Fillmore presided over some of the most momentous and passionate debates in American history as the Senate debated whether to allow slavery in the new territories. By January the 21st, 1850, President Taylor sent a message to Congress that urged the admission of California immediately and New Mexico later, and for the Supreme Court to settle the boundary dispute between the state of Texas and New Mexico. Clay introduced what was called the Omnibus Bill. And the Omnibus Bill was rejected, but the Omnibus Bill later became the Compromise of 1850. Now, Zachary Taylor was trying to get all this together, and he was giving in a little bit to the southern states and a little bit to the northern states. He tried to make a compromise. That's what the Compromise of 1850 was all about. And remember, it also recognized the sovereignty of the states. By May of 1850, with the senators divided equally on the bill, Millard Fillmore cast his tie-breaking vote in favor of the Compromise of 1850. But he did his best to keep peace among senators and reminded them of the vice president's power to rule them out of order and to cast the deciding vote. And there were fights in the Senate. Even my cousin, Homer Paul, had a fight in the Senate. And my cousin, Haskell Paul, had a fight in the State Bar Association. They had fist fights. There was a physical confrontation between Henry S. Foote and Thomas Hart Benton. And finally, the senators intervened to separate them. Foote had pointed the gun at his colleague as Benton advanced upon him. We know that on July the 4th, 1850, that Zachary Taylor became very ill. Some people think he was poisoned, and still do, that he was assassinated by the North or the South. But either one of them liked him. The Northerners didn't like him and the Southerners didn't like him, because he wouldn't promote slavery in any of the new states, and he had won the war. Basically, Zachary Taylor was the war horse. Texas was a real problem when Fillmore became president. He reinforced troops, federal troops in the area, and warned Bell, the governor of Texas, to keep his peace. Also, the Mormons. There were Mormon problems. Mormons wanted to found another nation, and Brigham Young at this time had his own militia in Utah, but he wanted to claim Arizona and Nevada also. If you go into Nevada and Arizona, you'll see a lot of Mormon colonies. Finally, Fillmore granted the Utah Territory and allowed Brigham Young to be the first governor of the territory. And Brigham Young named the county and a city after Millard Fillmore. One of the terrible things that of the Compromise of 1850 was the Fugitive Slave Bill. The Fugitive Slave Bill. Now, that was a compromise of the North. Millard Fillmore told them, if we want to preserve the Union, we cannot encroach upon states' rights of the Southern people, of the Southern states. Now, you people are encouraging the slaves to run away and go north under the Underground Railroad, etc., etc., etc. And when they get up there, you treat them and you give them jobs. Now, let me say this right now. The North had slavery also, and it was white slavery. In the great mills and the industry of the North, they enslaved children as young as 5 years old in their factories. The Southern Baptist Convention and the Southern Baptists decided to go into these slave states of the North and to start up Sunday schools and to allow people to only work 6 days a week instead of seven and give them off Sunday to rest. And the children could go to Sunday school and learn how to read and write so they could get out of the slave plantations of the factories of the North. So the North did not have its nose clean either, in many ways, except they didn't. You didn't hear that. You heard the old story, slave to the company store. I sold my soul to the company store. You couldn't leave. You didn't make enough money to buy groceries. And the grocers at the company store, in the coal mines, in the industries, whatever it was, the big mills, the prices were higher than anything else, but they could get it on credit. Well, we had the slavery in the North and slavery in the South. Later on, we'll see John D. Rockefeller, and we'll see Andrew Carnegie and others literally enslave the workers of America. And that problem wouldn't be taken care of until Teddy Roosevelt became president of the United States. Fillmore sent a special message to Congress on August 6, 1850. And in that letter from Governor Bell and his reply, he warned that the armed Texans would be viewed as intruders and urged Congress to diffuse sectional tensions by passing the Compromise of 1850, which also detailed the boundaries between Texas and New Mexico. The Fugitive Slave Bill were in among all of these. Millard Fillmore told Douglas and many others in the House, which had a northern majority because of the populations in the North, that the Fugitive Slave Bill better be passed to get this whole thing done to preserve the Union. And he said to them, to the abolitionists, if you don't agree with the bill, abstain from voting. Let it pass. We've got to have this bill go. And I don't like the Fugitive Slave Bill any more than you do, but we've got to preserve the Union. The Union is more important than our opinions. In this, California was admitted as a free state, and the District of Columbia's slave trade was supposed to be abolished. The District of Columbia, of course, is Washington, D.C. the final status of New Mexico and Utah would be settled later. Of course, in Utah, they enslaved women. Let me repeat that. In Utah, they enslaved women. The Mormon Church, under the leadership of Brigham Young, which had 75 wives, encouraged all the men, and they were advertising in Europe for wives from these good, upstanding Mormon men in Utah territory, and that if they would come there, they could just share in the economy of Utah, except it didn't say that they were going to be slaves, sex slaves and slaves, because the women worked the fields. The women took care of the homes. The women took care of the children. You can read some of the stories of what happened back in those days. Finally, after polygamy was outlawed, reluctantly, the Mormon issue, of course, in Utah territory, in the state of Utah, you have Mormon judges, you have Mormon juries. You think you're going to convict anyone of polygamy or whatever? And then you have Mormon colonies all around where these guys have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 wives. And by the way, in Utah today, there is a lot of welfare problem, because you've got men going around and they'll buy a 20-acre or 30-acre piece of land someplace, and they would put a whole bunch of mobile homes on it and put one of their wives in each mobile home and children, and they get on welfare. You know, they can have one legal wife, you know, and all the rest of them, you know, are on welfare, getting food stamps and Medicare, etc. And so the guy goes around and collects the checks. The gangs do that in California. They get them up here, these big farms up there, and they get them on the roll. They get them out of El Salvador and everything else. They get up there, and then they go around and do the same thing. They have wives here, and they're getting all of these welfare checks and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, California is a what? Sanctuary state. Problems. That Millard Fillmore knew that immigration would cause election problems. And immigration would cause lack of assimilation, that people would come into America not wanting to be Americans. You come into this nation, you ought to be an American. I am American Indian. I'm at least half Cherokee, Chickasaw, Brule Lakota, Santee Dakota, and Ojibwe and Chickasaw. And all of my people had to give up their language and go into their white prison schools and learn. Now, if we had to do that and we owned this land from shore to shore, surely immigrants ought to, coming into this country, ought to have to learn the American language, English, and use it in their businesses, etc. And I've said this for the last 50 years of preaching. Anybody that comes into this land and we accommodate them by printing out driver's license, etc., in their own languages, we are insulting those people and telling them that they're too ignorant and dumb to learn the language of the nation here. And which nation, if we go into any other nation to do business, we have to learn the nation, the language of that nation, don't we? Don't we? Millard Fillmore continued to push the infrastructure of America, the infrastructure of the United States of America. In harbors, he tried to appoint men to the Supreme Court. One thing that they say that Millard Fillmore was a very bad man, a very bad president, is that he enforced the Fugitive Slave Act. When Millard Fillmore signed the Compromise of 1850, he said that I will uphold the law of the Union of the United States of America, and he did. And he enforced the Fugitive Slave Act, and they were really mad because he did. Several people said one thing about Millard Fillmore: he stood for the laws and preserved the laws of the nation. We have a man up there in the Washington, D.C. is rewriting all the laws and writing executive orders one after the other against America. Millard Fillmore in his foreign relations. He opened up trade with Japan. Now, until this period of time, Japan, if you needed supplies, if you were out there in the middle of the ocean and you had sick people, if you had a ship that was sinking, if you went into the harbors of Japan, you were arrested. And you were imprisoned. Millard Fillmore sent representatives there to make contact with the Japanese. They didn't want to have anything to do with the rest of the world. China was like that too. They were antisocial. They didn't need anything from us, and they didn't want us over there either. But Millard Fillmore opened up the Pacific passages there so that we could have supplies from Japan if we needed it, that we could put our people in hospitals there from injured or whatever, we could get our ships repaired, etc. And he opened up the trade there. Now, Napoleon tried to lay hands on Hawaii. And Millard Fillmore said, hands off. Hands off. That's Hawaii. He settled the issues with Portugal that we had before. And, of course, regarding Cuba, many of the southern states wanted to see Cuba become a state in the United States, or at least a territory. But if we did, we'd have to go to war with Spain. And since Millard Fillmore did not think the Cubans would assimilate into American culture, he said, no, let's don't do it. They also tried to get America to take sides with Hungary, because we had a lot of German immigrants here, and the German immigrants wanted us to stand behind Hungary. And Fillmore said, neutrality on that issue. That's too far away. Neutrality. I don't want to get involved with that. After Fillmore basically did not run for president, he still had a lot of a calming influence and a compromising influence on all of the political turmoil in America, all the way to the end of his life. He was the first president to return to private life without becoming extremely wealthy while in office, or the possession of land and estates. The present occupant, of course, we know, has become a multimillionaire by his foreign intervention and overlooking things from different countries. He had no pension. He needed to earn a living. He was going to go back to New York and practice law in the higher courts. Almost immediately, his wife died. Then his only daughter died of cholera. And he just basically sat down and just mourned. Finally, in 1854, with Senator Stephen Douglas, the Kansas-Nebraska Act embroiled the whole nation and threatened civil war again, and he stood up and he began to debate and tried to calm the issue down again, trying to preserve the Union. He kept warning the nation that immigrants, too many immigrants in America, the immigrants would not assimilate into America as Americans, and the immigration could greatly influence the elections in America. He finally ran for president again to go back and calm things down, but they held so much against him because he enforced the fugitive slave law. Finally, he remarried again. He married a lady by the name of Carolyn McIntosh, which was a wealthy, well-to-do widow. And they combined their wealth, and they purchased a large house on Niagara Square in Buffalo, New York. And for the remainder of his life, the Fillmores devoted themselves to entertaining and philanthropy. And they generously supported every conceivable cause that they could support. They also built the General Hospital, which they helped found in Buffalo. When the Civil War started, which Fillmore had tried to circumvent during his whole political life, he did back Abraham Lincoln, even though he did not agree with him, especially with his illegal, immoral, you might say, controversial policies and payoffs. The Civil War was not started over slavery. It was started over slave rights. It became a war over slavery. And President Abraham Lincoln gave his life to free the American Negroes, not the American Indian. The American Indians were still used as slaves even after the Civil War. He worked to try, after the Civil War, like Lincoln. Lincoln said, let's forgive these brothers and bring them into the Union and love them again and try to reunite this Union in every way. Forgiving and forgetting our differences. Fillmore said that he thought the southern states ought to still be able to retain their slaves, those that were willing, and that slavery should never be expanded nor continued any further after that. Some of the people in his Reconstruction, some of the people very much disagreed with him because he was too forgiving to the South. And remember, he was a Northerner. But remember, Abraham Lincoln wanted to do the same thing. And he encouraged General Ulysses S. Grant to do the same thing, and that's why more people weren't elected, more people weren't arrested. The Northern agitators wanted to arrest and hang the Civil War leaders. Jesse James and the younger brothers could never go back into normal life because there were warrants for their arrest and to be hung by the neck until dead if they were ever caught. Fillmore tried to ease all of that to put America back together. And then Andrew Johnson made a big mess of it, as you know. The Reconstruction was a terrible thing. The South had been completely destroyed. A man once said that Millard Fillmore had the warmth and the wisdom throughout his life, which he defended the Union and tried to put the Union back together. Fillmore, even though he was greatly condemned for supporting the Fugitive Slave Act, one man said he was a faithful executor of the law of the United States for good or for ill. No matter what, whether he believed in it or not, if he signed a bill, he was going to execute the laws of the United States. The last of my notes. He founded the now the University of Buffalo, the Millard Fillmore Academy, a center, and the Millard Fillmore College, which bear his name. And in February 18, 2010, the United States Mint released the 13th coin in the presidential $1 coin program bearing Fillmore's likeness. Millard Fillmore, as president, served his country over a century and a half ago. When you look at him, you must understand the times in which he lived and what the man stood for. He was a great president, one of the last of the great presidents. He led this country on a very rocky course that led to the two-party system that we have today. Fillmore had sided with and guaranteed rights with the pro-slavery elements in ordering enforcement of the Fugitive Slave Law. But he did it not being what we call for slavery at all, but because it was a law of the United States of America. I'm sure if he was here today, he would stand for our rights to bear the rights of freedom of speech and the right to bear arms and the right of religious freedom in this country. Millard Fillmore was a great president, and he left a legacy for you and for me. And we need to remember the gift that these men gave to us as citizens of this great nation, and do our best to uphold the laws of this nation, not to be infringed upon by any so-called president or any dictatorial powers. We had this freedom handed to us, not freely, but by the blood of thousands of men in defending this nation against other nations and even against itself. And even until this day, where our greatest enemy is from within, not only from without. Father, thank you for your word that it tells us to honor the governments and help us to, in every way we can, to build those governments into God-fearing nations as this nation once was. Father, please forgive me where I failed you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.